My name is Colin Thomas, and I am a senior majoring in economics and music. Before I introduce Professor Donald Sari this morning, I have one additional announcement to make. You are all invited to a public forum with local candidates for Northfield School Board, City Council, Mayor, Rice County Commissioner, and Minnesota State Representative. The forum will take place this coming Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m. in the Great Hall. Professor Donald Sari is the Distinguished Professor of Economics and Mathematics at the University of California at Irvine and the director of the recently founded Institute for Mathematical Behavioral Sciences. He received his undergraduate degree from Michigan Tech and his PhD from Purdue, where his thesis discussed collision dynamics in Newtonian physics. After a postdoctoral position in the astronomy department at Yale, Professor Sari taught mathematics at Northwestern for over three decades, moving to UC Irvine in January of 2000. Dr. Sari's research interests center on dynamic systems and their applications not only to mathematical physics, but to politics, markets, and interorganizational behavior as well. In seeking to understand why voting patterns sometimes lead to results that don't reflect the true wishes of the electorate, Professor Sari has become a leading critic of the American electoral process. He is an advocate of voting procedures that more accurately represent the will of the people by taking their second choices into consideration. According to Dr. Sari, an apparent anomaly such as the 1998 election of wrestler Jesse Ventura can be explained more accurately by the application of mathematical theory than that of social theory. Praised by his colleagues as a creative thinker with unique interdisciplinary perspectives, Professor Sari believes that one of the biggest problems in American classrooms today are teachers who lecture students instead of stimulating creative approaches to problem solving. Learning is not a spectator activity, he insists. As a volunteer teacher in a fourth grade class some years ago, Professor Sari demonstrated the effectiveness of his theories about both voting behavior and teaching. He used the mathematics of decision-making and voting to introduce concepts from algebra and geometry to more sophisticated mathematical techniques. As he posed problems in achieving a fair vote, the students conceived an election method similar to the one developed over 200 years ago by the French mathematician J.C. Borda. Professor Sari is the chief editor for the Bulletin of the American Mathematical Society and is on the editorial boards of several journals of dynamics, economics, and decision analysis. He is a member of the National Academy of Sciences, the NRC Math Science Education Board, and the Board of International Scientific Organizations. A Guggenheim Fellow, Dr. Sari has received honorary doctorates from Purdue, Kane University, and Michigan Tech. The title of today's convocation is Elections, but do we elect whom we really want? Please join me in welcoming Professor Donald Sari to Carleton College.
Thank you, Colin. He knows more about me than I do. I was a little bit worried what he's going to say next on there. And also, I want to thank my good friend and former student, Deanna Huntsberger, for inviting me and arranging for me to come here. You know, it's my first trip to Carleton College, and I'm excited. This, when you think about excellence in education, two schools jump to mind, Carleton and... I forgot the other one, but I understand it's on the other side of the railroad tracks. also, the courtesy and the just plain reception I received was incredible. This is the first school where I've been where they named something after me. The bald spot. I understand that there's little interest in elections this year. And let me tell you, the election which we're facing right now, it's a very serious one. It's not going to just govern what's going to happen in the next 4 years. It's going to govern what's going to happen in the foreseeable future, the next 20, 30, 40 years. The next president, whichever one is elected, will be appointing probably four Supreme Court justices. And what happens is they live for a long time. They will govern, and they will determine what's going to happen in our society for many, many years to come. Take it seriously, whichever candidate you support. But elections are used in far more, far, far more than just this coming up election on November 2nd. We use them. Many of the students here may be in a family discussion, try to decide where they're going to go to school, and you had an election. Maybe not a formal one, you had one. We have them in our social clubs. We have them in our fraternities and sororities, in our departments. We have them to decide what pizza we're going to have. In fact, try to think back. Try to think back to the first time you heard the line, "Everyone in favor, show your hands." Okay? A long time ago, elections govern our life. But the question is, if elections govern our life, do we really get what we want? And I'm going to try to show you today that often we do not. And I'm going to try to show you why we do not. And I'm going to try, if I can, to make many of you worried. About, not about just the election coming up, but about the last election that you were involved in your social club, or whatever, in your state, your primaries, whatever. You say, should we really worry? Well, where's an example? Florida 2000, let me tell you, folks, it made even a mild-mannered person such as me start uttering four-letter words, like Chad. Now, the problem, folks, was not Chad. It was not a four-letter word. Instead, it was a five-letter word, Nader. It was not Nader's fault. It was the fact that we had three or more candidates. That was the problem. Whenever there are two candidates or two decisions or two anything, then our usual majority vote works quite well. But once we have three, uh-oh, we got problems. I'm going to give you some good news, and I'm going to give you some bad news about what can happen. But as far as the bad news, let me warn you, beware. Beware, because it is incredibly easy to make bad decisions. Where? Everywhere. Elections, business decisions, and hey, I'm out in Southern California where we root for USC, football rankings, and all of these others. In fact, as Professor Hunsberger has shown, you can make bad decisions with statistics. Beautiful paper. Even in college and departmental meetings. And in fact, even in the choice of pizza. Okay. Now, I told you, can you hear me? I hate standing still. Can you hear me? No, you can't. Well, then how did you know how to answer? It's just like in class when I take attendance. If you're not here, please stand up or something. Okay? All righty. So I just want to tell you about the nice little party they had for me last night. A nice reception. What they did is they had a party. Deanna put together a group of 15 to have to decide what kind of a beverage and what they would serve. Well, six of them wanted milk. If that wasn't available, wine and beer. Five of them, they're from Wisconsin, and what can you expect? They wanted beer, wine, or milk. And four of them, those Californians, they always want wine or beer or milk. So what happens is, you know, when they voted, six of them voted for milk, five of them voted for beer, four voted for wine, and so that was the outcome. Wine. They got in the car and drove down to the local beverage store to buy a keg of milk. When they got there, they were told, is it lucky you didn't want beer? We had some people from St. Olaf's, and they bought us all out of beer. Well, what difference does it make? If you take a look, milk is in first place, wine's in last place, so you just order milk. That's obviously what the outcome is. Let's check. Wine and milk. The first six people, six of them clearly prefer milk to wine. All right. Let's look at the next five. Oh, they prefer wine to milk. And the next four, well, they prefer wine over anything. What we have then is that last place wine is preferred by 60% of the people over first place milk. Well, there's something wrong here. Let's check beer and milk. Again, if you check on the first six people, beer is of a bottom rank, milk is top, very good. But the next nine people, they prefer beer to milk. Again, 60% of the people really prefer beer to milk. What we have, and this is the troubling fact, is that these people, a landslide proportion of these people, really truly prefer anything to milk. Now, put your favorite election candidates in there. And you see where the problem lies. And there's only one more pair, so let's check. Beer and wine. If you took a look at beer and wine, the first six prefer wine to beer, and the last six, four prefer wine to beer. By two-thirds, two-thirds of these voters really prefer last place wine to beer. These people really prefer last place wine to anything. In other words, had they used the pairwise vote, what we would have had is exactly the opposite. It would have taken the outcome and flipped it around. And we would have had wine. Now, you look like you enjoy beer. Do you? See, he's scouring at me and he's saying, where's the beer? No problem, folks. Take a look. See if you can figure out how to elect beer. Just a runoff election. If you have just a runoff election, what happens is the first outcome will be milk, beer, wine. Wine will be dropped. The election will be between milk and beer will win. Look, an incredibly simple example, less complicated than what we expect to see in normal elections, or in your departments, or in your social groups, your fraternities, your sororities, church groups, anything. A very easy example, and yet anything get elected. Really, the problem is that rather than what the voters want, an election outcome can more accurately reflect which voting procedure you used. Now, Colin, in his very gracious introduction, stated that I gave examples to fourth graders. I gave this example to fourth graders, not with beer or wine, honest. But with TV shows. They could see through it. Can you? Can you see through this example and see who should really be elected? Take a look at one thing there, and I'm going to start giving you some political examples. Notice milk. Milk is liked by six people, but disliked by the rest. This is the type of phenomena that can happen in actual elections. The actual examples can be far more complicated. So to have actual political examples, I'm going to start off with what happened in the state of New York in 1970. James Buckley, you know, Bill Buckley, the commentator? It's his brother. What people will do to get votes in this election season. I know people had strong opinions about James Buckley, but that was the worst I've ever seen. And so James Buckley, what he did is he was really not liked by the people of New York. Ottinger, and I can't remember the other candidate, maybe someone else will. But what happened is they were people were trying to decide, Malcolm Beer type situation, between who was going to be elected. And they ignored Buckley. And Buckley was elected. He was a one-term senator, but he was elected. He was the milk of this example. Okay? So in other words, this phenomena is not just an isolated example, you know, a cute example. It really happens, folks. And it may have happened to you. The next example really comes from the state of Louisiana in 1991. Governor Romer was running for re-election. Now, he made some controversial, well, if you live in Minnesota, you wouldn't say they're controversial. But for Louisiana, they were controversial decisions. But look who he was running against. He was running against Edwards. Edwards was a former governor who had been indicted for his misdoings in office. And David Duke, head of the Ku Klux Klan. Romer was the wine of this example. While liked in first or second by a lot of people, he came in last in the election. And so they had a runoff, the famous Crook or Klan runoff election. My favorite example, though, comes from a state that I really like and have visited every single year since I've been born. It's a state with a lot of Norwegian bachelor farmers, where all the children are above average. You may have heard of it. And that is when Humphrey was running for election in 1998, and he was running against Norm Coleman. Humphrey had just won in a major suit against the tobacco companies. So what happened, though, is, remember, I said you need three candidates. And there was a third, Jesse the Body Ventura. For exactly, the pundits, I was amused, the pundits, what did they do is they all tried to explain why we then ended up with Jesse the Mind. And all of their examples and everything were about a youthful generation moving in and about et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't that at all, folks. It was exactly that we're using the wrong voting procedure. That was the whole reason. Now, the examples that I've given all involve candidates where they were in office for one term. But the effects of using the bad decision procedure, and our plurality vote, folks, is the worst. I could go on for 2 days giving you examples. But what happens is they were voted out of office at the end of one term. The example that bothers me happened in Chile in 1970 when a Marxist ran. He was the milk of the example. About 60-some percent of the people were moderates. And what happened is when he was elected, if people don't get what they want, they rebel. Unfortunately, the United States CIA supported that rebellion. And a country with an incredibly proud history of democratic processes, fell into a period of dictatorship that they're still struggling to come out of. Using the wrong election procedure can have incredibly serious consequences. And not only there, but also in business decisions, personal decisions, statistics, on and on. In fact, using the correct or the incorrect decision procedure can affect your life on a daily basis, which pizza you're going to have, and on a long-term basis. It's important, critical, serious stuff that I want to get as many of you involved in as possible. So, what do we do? How do we analyze this? Well, the first person to do so was Jean-Charles de Borda. He was a Frenchman, obviously. He was an adventurer. What he did is he fought in the American War for Independence on our side, leading a fleet of six ships. He did fleets going down to South America. You see that device in his hand over there that he's holding? He invented an astronomical device, and that device right there was used to determine the metric system of a meter. He was on the committee, along with several other mathematicians, to reform the metric system, which they have in Europe, but not here yet. And really, I'm going to give you an insight right now. I already told you that the plurality system, horrible. Yet, we use it all the time. And I'm going to give you an example why it's so horrible. Suppose tomorrow morning, the president of Carleton College says that from now on, all grades, all class rankings will be determined by the number of A's you receive. Sounds good. Sounds like excellence. Until you realize that student with one A and the rest F's is ranked above the student with all B's. That is the problem. That is precisely the problem with our plurality vote. It ranks only the A candidates and doesn't give any credit for the B's, the C's, the D's. That is why all of these examples, and I could go on for a couple of days giving examples, why people did not get elected when, indeed, that's who the voter wanted by polls and everything else. On the Republican side, Democrat side, both sides. What you really should do is give more information about who's your second-ranked candidate, your third-ranked candidate, etc. And what Borda did is he said the following. He said, look, folks, if you have three candidates, and suppose you're ranked number one, there's two candidates listed below you, so we're going to give you 2 points. You're listed number two. There's one candidate listed below you, so you get 1 point. And I'm sorry, you're bottom ranked. No one listed below you, you get zero. If you take a look at this, this is the four-point grading system, right? A gets four, B gets three, etc. But which weights, which number, why 2, 1, 0? Why not 6, 5, 0? Or as mathematicians would say, why not pi, e, and zero? Or some other numbers. Well, you see, just that beverage example, that simple beverage example, what happens is that by choosing different weights, like I said, you can get seven, there we go, seven different election rankings. Three of them are ties, but you can get seven different election rankings, seven different election outcomes. Nobody changed their mind. All the people just voted, they marked their ballots. All we're doing is saying, how are we going to tally them? And you get very different outcomes. Boy, I would sure love to be in charge of how we're going to tally the ballots. So the real question is, Which method is the best, that best reflects the views of the voters? Or in business decisions, or in statistics, what methods best reflect the data? And this was only recently solved a couple of years ago, this problem, and I'm going to tell you. That's part of the good news and the bad news. But before I give you the good news, I want to tell you how bad it can get. Suppose I have three candidates. I told you, you say, well, all right. He gave an example about some beverages and things like this, about a party that never happened. But what happens is that, how often can that happen? read three candidates and conservative assumptions about voters' preferences. 70% of the time, expect the election ranking to change when you change how you're going to tally the ballots. 70% of the time. With more candidates, the problems become more severe. Here I have a very, very simple example of 9 voters. They're trying to rank Ann, Barb, Connie, and Deanna. And so what happens is you see 2 of them have Ann for, 4 of them have Ann first place, 3 of them have Deanna first place, and 2 of them have Connie. Nobody likes Barb. Let's take this example and let's vote for one. And surely Ann wins. Vote for 2. Barb wins. She's got a lot of second place votes in there. Take a look. Vote for 3. Connie wins. Sorry, Deanna. You're the only one that didn't get elected. And so now what we could do is have another procedure to find out which one of these 3 would win. So let's use the board account, where I would give 3-2-1-0. Deanna wins. In other words, a very innocuous, just 9-person example, anyone can win. And it's worse, it's that if I use different weights, I just told you about who could win. I didn't tell you about the rankings. If I look at the rankings, this one example has 18 different election rankings depending on how I decide to tally the ballots. Do you believe in your election outcomes? I sure don't. Anyone can win? Ooh, I get worried. And about 85% of the time, if you've got 4 candidates, expect the outcome to change. 85% of the time. Expect the outcome to depend on what procedure you used. I don't like that stuff. Even more can go wrong. Suppose the math department is trying to hire somebody. Alice, Connie, Diane this time, and Barb. And you take a look at the outcomes, and sure enough, Alice gets 9 votes, and Barb gets 8 votes, and Connie gets 7, and Diane gets 6. So the outcome is clear. Alice wins. So the chair goes over to the department, picks up the phone, and going to go call Alice. But the phone rings instead, and it was Diane. And she said she's going to Harvard instead. All right. With Diane not there, I know of no department that would have another election. But they should. Take a look. I crossed out Diane here. And take a look. 2 of the voters would now vote for Barb. Barb now would get 10 votes rather than 8. And 4 of the voters would vote for Connie. 4 plus 7 is 11. Connie would now be the winner. The winner would be just the opposite. Ouch. If it would not be Diane that drops out, but Alice, then you take a look and see 3 of Alice's voters would now vote for Connie and 6 of them would vote for Diane, and the outcome would change. In fact, with this example, you drop any candidate or any 2 candidates, and guess what happens? The outcome just flips. What are we learning from the election? I say nothing. So who do these voters want? Alice or Diane? The data sure says Diane, but the outcome says Alice. Can this happen? If I had more time, I'd give you examples on the Olympics, selecting in the Olympics, and everything else where we dropped and we could see. It happens a lot. It is a general, general phenomenon. I'm not going to go through the next part. The next part really says, wow, what a wild example. And the next part says, you could design an example to try to embarrass me. You could take six candidates, and you could rank them in any way you want. Then you take five of them, rank them in any way you want. You take a different five, rank them in any way you want, etc. You're going to try to embarrass me. You're going to try to get an example that I'm going to have to say, I can't do anything. And the answer is, that's not true. No matter what rankings you write down, no matter how perverse, no matter how horrible, I can create an example where that will be the election outcome. Nobody changes their mind. We just vote on different sets. And that will be the outcome. This example right here, incredibly chaotic. And indeed, that's how I proved it, by use of chaos theory. And it works for whatever weights you give. You know, if I give 6 points for a first-place candidate, four for a second, two for a third, zero for a last, etc., no matter what weights you use, it worked. The same horrible outcome that says don't trust anything still applies, with one exception. The board account. The board account is the only one that doesn't allow chaos, that doesn't allow everything to go to hell. So the question is, why? Why is this? This might be a candidate for us having election outcomes that I can trust. But you know, what did I show you? I showed you how bad things can be. Now, you know that faculty salaries are never what they should be. Sorry, deans. But what happens is as a result, a lot of faculty, every so often, what they do is they form a company or do consulting. I do the same. For a price, I will come to your organization. You tell me who you want to win. In your next election. And I will go through and talk to the voters and get their preferences. I will then create a voting procedure. Fair one. Everybody's involved. And what happens is, after the election, people will walk out saying, I don't know about my colleagues, but, and they will agree it's a fair outcome. Now, honest folks, I don't really do this. So don't contact me. I have been contacted by some politicians thinking I was serious about this. And the answer is no, I'm not. But I really use this as an example to show you how dangerous the problem can be, that you might inadvertently choose the wrong procedure. Let me give you an example. I have Anne, 10 people like Anne, better than Barb, better than Connie, better than Diane, better than Elaine, better than F. I have 10, better than Barb, Connie, Diane, Elaine, F, and A. And you see it there, right there. Who would you like me to elect? F. Oh, wow. What happens is, everybody, all of these, every single one of these voters prefer Connie to Diane to Elaine to F. I'm going to have to charge you a little bit more for this one. I can do it. I can do it, and I can do it in a way that involves each and every one of the candidates so that people will leave the meeting and say, well, I don't know. But yeah, it was fair. Can you see how? I'm going to use a procedure that we use quite often. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make pairwise comparisons in a particular order. Take a look. The first one is between Diane and Elaine. And if you look, everyone prefers Diane to Elaine. So she wins unanimously. The next comparison is between Connie and Elaine, or Diane. Look, everyone prefers Connie. Connie wins. The next election is between Connie and Barb. Well, now we have a little trouble. The first 10 prefer Barb to Connie, and the next 10 prefer Barb to Connie, so she wins with a 2/3 vote. Landslide proportion. Now we're going to go between Anne and Barb. The first 10 and the last 10 prefer Anne. She wins. And now we got F versus Anne. And take a look. The last 10 and the middle 10 prefer F. You can see the newspapers in the morning. F wins with a 2/3 vote. If you can come up with an example where it's so stacked in one way and still, in using procedures that we use, come up with the outcome, you must be worried, you have to be worried about what happened in your last election. Now, you may say that we make decisions by consensus. Well, folks, let me give you a secret. Mathematicians are mild-mannered, very easygoing people, with one exception: when they have to select a calculus book. That is the closest I've seen to justifiable homicide. Okay. The arguments rage. They don't take votes. They try to do it by consensus. And here's how it goes. We're going to try book D versus E. Well, D is so heavy, you're going to get a hernia carrying it to class. So let's choose D over E. Well, what about C over D? Well, C has better pictures. And you go through here, and towards the end of the day, oh, I'm tired. And you get down to F and A, and we choose F, and you walk out, and you say, oh, my colleagues, what horrible tastes they have. But we got F again. I would use the name of a book, but I think you use it. All righty. In fact, what happens is, notice what you do here. And this is a word of advice for those of you who want to win your next argument. What you do is you put you start to trace, or you try to focus the argument at the beginning on candidates you want to kill off each other. And you want to bring up yours at the very end. I have an incredible track record in our department for winning my point. And I'm just using this approach. It works. Now it's time for good news. And what's the good news? Well, the good news is that we do now have a procedure. That we now have identified a procedure, and we can explain each and every one of the possible paradoxes that can ever occur. And we now have a way of understanding which procedure best reflects the views of the voters. And this was a problem that was first raised in 1770 by Borda, and I recently solved it a couple of years ago. To do so, I'm going to have an experiment. We're going to have an election. You are one of the candidates. How many votes did you get? 5 million. How many votes did you get? You're the other candidate. 5.5 million. That's unusual. Usually the guy takes a lower number. Oh, are you in trouble now? So what happens is he wins because he has 5.5 million. Now, here's a way of tallying the ballots. We could take one of her voters, one of his voters, combine them, and say that's a tie. One of her voters, one of his voters, combine them. That's a tie. And continue. We will get 5 million ties. He still has 0.5 million voters for him. So he has a surplus. So a way of trying to understand election and decision procedures in business and everywhere else is to say, first, in engineering, I'm working with engineers on some of this, what constitutes a tie? By looking at what constitutes a tie, we then see if an election procedure or a decision procedure gives you a tie. If it doesn't give you a tie, then we know why it's giving you bad outcomes. It should be a tie, but it's not. If one voter preferred her and one voter preferred him, and you didn't get a tie, you'd say something's wrong. So the idea is to find what voting procedures honor ties. Now, to do so, let me tell you about my wife. I gotta tell you a story. You know, when I was a shy graduate student, what I did is, and all the men in here will appreciate this one, what I did is I finally got enough courage and went up to my wife-to-be and said, would you marry me? And her response was, what? And be sorry for the rest of my life? Fortunately, she really said yes. But we love each other very much. Except, well, we have opposite opinions. If I like A, B, C, she's going to like C, B, A. But isn't that great? It means that on election day, if it's nice and sunny, we can go to the beach. We don't have to vote. Our votes are just going to cancel. Or will they? Let's check. If we use the plurality vote, I will vote for A and no one else. She will vote for C and no one else. And what happens then is we end up with B getting zero votes. The plurality vote gives a bias. This is the lost information. If we vote for two, I vote for A and B, she will vote for B and C. Now we have a bias for B. So what we have here are biases that are introduced. These are symmetries. So now if we use the board account, I will give 2 points to A, one to B, and zero to C, and she will give just the opposite. Add them together, and you get 2, 2, 2. A tie. And so what we do see is that the way of choosing, and this goes on for higher symmetries, etc., the way of choosing, you see you're going to have an inherent bias in your weights unless you use the board account. So really, in this manner, the problem has been resolved. The problem was resolved by use of mathematical symmetries. That was just one symmetry, this way and flip it around. Mathematicians, hey, we're great. We invent all kinds of symmetries. But some of the symmetries involve how symmetries involve symmetries. The Rubik's Cube, you remember that? How it would drive you crazy? Yeah, get this one straight and got that one screwed up. And that turns out to be the mathematics of understanding this is related to the mathematics symmetry of elections. More complicated in elections. So the conclusion really is that of all of the voting procedures, only the board account is the procedure which best reflects the views of the voters. It is unique. There are analogs of this, as Deanna has shown, for statistics, which would be the Kruskal-Wallis test in statistics, and there's analogs of this in engineering. That's more complicated. But the board account is the only one which reflects the views of the voters. Now, I don't mean to say that I always support the board account. When I was at Northwestern, the department was saying, Don, you're going around giving talks. on election procedures. Why don't you give one to our department? And I said, nah. Come on. Nah. Finally, you know, you get into one of those situations where you can't say no anymore. So I said, okay. I gave a talk to my colleagues, and the worst imaginable thing happened. The next day, we changed our important election outcomes to the board account. Why was that worse? Because I knew we were getting biased outcomes with our election procedures, but they were biased towards my interests. The choice of an election procedure matters. What happens is that now that we have, this is only one example where mathematics can help the important problems of society. You know, it's common for us to say, wow, look at the advances in computers and look at the advances in physics and engineering, et cetera, et cetera. But the social and behavioral sciences, no. Well, rather than sitting around and complaining, I think we have to do something about it. As I stated last night, this is an area where we need talent. Talented students, talented faculty, talented, interested people to try to promote some of these ideas. This is only one example where mathematics has helped and played a crucial role in understanding the problems of our society. There are many, many other areas. And so really what I want to ask you is to join us. It's a new area, and it has promised to be exciting. And here's the commercial. Here are two of the books where I got my information. And from that, I say thank you. Thank you very much. I think I have about 5 minutes to answer, entertain any quick questions. Yes. All right, what he's doing is he's bringing forth, you see, when you look at voting systems, there are large numbers of different scenarios you can put forth, and he's putting forth a very good one in terms of, well, are people voting for who they like or against who they like or in various other type scenarios, and it's an excellent one. But there are so many other scenarios out there, and really what we have to do is that if you look at ways that will solve one scenario, you know, that to vote against, what would be some of the, what should be the weights, or I really am pretty close with these people, but far apart with those people, etc. It ends up that you get very distorted outcomes in the majority of the cases. But your point is well taken, but the fact, and it's been well considered and adopted in examinations of this. Excellent question. Any others? Yes. I bet this is not hypothetical.
And let's say it's a tie. They're using the board account, and it's a small enough group of people who are voting that it could be a tie using the board account.
What you do is you drop the last place candidate. Use the same ballots. Drop the bottom ranked candidate. Use the same ballots, and then recount. And that will, if you have a tie there, it's almost impossible, but it can happen. Yes?
Yeah, I was wondering if your example, when your wife had three ways,
Sure. And there's ways of breaking ties. A lot of times there are situations where it's just plain a tie. They're rare, but they crop up. Absolutely. Yes?
A couple of times you used the example of strategic agenda setting. What if you introduce strategic voting?
I am. Not only am I, but I wrote a book, I wrote an article for the magazine that Steve Kennedy and Deanna Huntsberger about how to cheat if you must. Okay, and I've given all the ways in which you can look at elections and manipulate. And the interesting thing is that the board account, there's a beautiful paper by two of my friends, Alan Gibbard and Mark Satterthwaite, where they proved in the early 70s, when I was, what, a year old or 2 years old, that it is impossible to create a procedure which is immune to strategic behavior. So the next question is, can we create a procedure which minimizes the likelihood of a successful strategic behavior? To my surprise, that was the board account. Now, he's raising an excellent question. There are a lot of pragmatic issues, like, I don't know, like, how many times have you gone to the ballot and you, particularly for a judge, and you say, who are these people? Okay. And then there are other times when you know, all of you have voted strategically, be honest, at one time or another. And so the question then is that can we handle these pragmatic issues? And the answer is, now that we understand the mathematics of why things go wrong, we can factor in all of these pragmatic considerations. And we can then come up with ways to get around the problems. So we now can start making progress on them. Excellent question. Any others? No others? Oh, Grant? Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I was wondering about abstentions using the board account. If you're highly favor one candidate and absolutely don't want some others at the other end of the spectrum, are you able to abstain or does it go up ballot?
What happens is, if you recall how I described the board account, it's the number of candidates listed below. If you voted for one candidate, that candidate would get 1 point. And what you do then is, this is what I mean when I, in answer to his question about when we take a look at pragmatic realities, how do we handle it? And so we can handle these types of problems, yes. And you had a question right here? Let's make that the last one. Oh, okay. Way in the back. All right, let's make that the last question. How do I decide who gets on the ballot? Okay, two things. When I was chair of personnel committee at Northwestern University in the math department, we had four positions. We had over 1,000 candidates. Who in the world could rank order 1,000 candidates? That's nonsense. So by recognizing the question about abstentions, I don't know these people and I don't care. What we did is we used the board account, 4-3-2-1 points, or 3-2-1, depending on how many you voted for. So you could vote for four candidates. And we found that the outcomes were very good then. Who gets on the ballot? Who gets on the ballot? These are questions of legal questions. My concern really is, what do we do when we get them on the ballot? But who gets on the ballot is a very crucial issue, as you're aware, and as all of us are aware. Okay? And I think with that, I want to thank you once more. Thank you very much.